T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, they got multiple formations. They got tempo. They've got the ability to do a lot of things. They got a lot of offense. And when you start looking at all the things they do, it's hard to prepare for all of it, you know, in a week, in a week's time. And then you throw in the fact they got that with a quarterback that he can make you right every play. I mean, the coach could – he could call a bad call, the kid will bail him out and go scramble for it. He calls a perfect call, he takes care of that.
That's Kirby Smart talking about – Kirby Smart talking about the Notre Dame quarterback, Ian Book. And as we continue our countdown to Georgia, Notre Dame, and our coverage in Athens leading up to kickoff between these two in the most anticipated non-conference game of the college football season here. John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we are bringing you our college football notebook.
The College Football Notebook is brought to you by Dozer, sponsor of the College Football Playoff.
As we talk about the game, let's welcome into the program Blue and Gold Illustrated, who joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Lou.
Lou.
Good morning, John and Hugh.
So, Lou, we all know about Ian Book, you know, down here in Georgia, but who else do we have to worry about on that offensive side of the ball?
Well, Chase Claypool has really developed as a receiver. The outside, he's at the boundary position, which was manned by Miles Boykin last year, who's with the Baltimore Ravens, was a third-round pick. Good size, tremendous. He's just become so much more in tune with everything, consistent. He can go deep, not necessarily the biggest deep threat, but he can go across the middle. He's become fearless. He can take a short gain and make it into a big one. I think, you know, at the end of spring, Brian Kelly even indicated that he has the makings to become a first-round pick as an NFL receiver. They'd really love to have Cole Kmet back at tight end. He broke his collarbone during August 8th practice. He's going to be available this week for the first time, according to Brian Kelly. Whether he starts, I don't know, but that would be a big help overall to the offense. Chris Fink in the slot, he caught 49 passes last year. Claypool caught 50. So there's experience there. There's people who can make plays, but not having Jafar Armstrong, their best running back, that's a main question mark at this point.
Lou's emoji of Blue and Gold Illustrated, Georgia Notre Dame, under the lights, Athens, Saturday night, going to be 93,000-plus in the all-time record crowd at Sanford Stadium. Lou, Notre Dame's certainly used to playing in front of 80-some-thousand at home. They play at Michigan. They play in big venues. So this is not any big deal to them to come down here and play. But it is different to come down here and play because it is – the South, and there is a bit of a different vibe to it than there is at Ohio State or at Purdue or at Michigan up in the North. You know, it's a little bit intimidating to some guys at times because it's got kind of a different feel to it. Is that something that concerns you at all?
It becomes a concern if you fall behind early and the crowd really gets into it. And in these big game-type environments, that's been kind of the biggest problem for Notre Dame. I mean, they're 0-6 in, like, major bowls, big game environments since 2000. And during that 0-6, they've played 360 minutes, and they've been in the lead for 2 minutes, 57 seconds. And that happened at Miami in 2017 as well, is Notre Dame took the opening possession, just barely missed on a touchdown to maybe take a quick 7-0 lead. And then all of a sudden the floodgates opened and Miami ended up winning 41-8. But the momentum, you could just feel it generated inside. And I think it had an effect on the team. So I think that is what is so crucial to Notre Dame is to, you know, in the first half, you don't have to necessarily have the lead, but, you know, just stay within striking distance, perhaps keep the crowd out of the game, and then strike, I think, in the second half, because that's kind of been the history, is in these type of games many times in environments such as this. And it was almost like that in 2017 when you had about 35,000 Georgia fans at Notre Dame Stadium. You know, you could sense then that, wow, this is a different crowd. They travel well and they're very, very supportive. So I think that's going to be a crucial element.
We're speaking to Lou Somogyi, Notre Dame reporter on 92.9 The Game. So, Lou, you know, it's been a couple years ago, but I think that, you know, when the last time Georgia played Notre Dame, that rushing attack was a pretty big factor for them. Do you think going into this game that Notre Dame's defense is going to try to stop the run before they stop the pass against Georgia?
They absolutely have to be able to do that. And, I mean, next to take it one game at a time, is there a bigger cliche in football than you've got to be able to run the ball and you've got to be able to stop the run? That's what Brian Kelly said in the preseason will be the determining factor of whether Notre Dame is going to be, you know, once again, a playoff caliber team, because they lost their two outstanding inside linebackers from the past 2 years, Drew Tranquil and Tavon Coney. They lost their first round tackle, Gary Tillery. And in the first two games of the season, Notre Dame right now out of 130 FBS teams ranks number 120 in rush defense at 230.5 yards per game. Georgia is eighth in the country with 286.7 yards rushing per game. Now, obviously, you know, it's only game two, and we're only going into game three. There's not a huge sample size. But if those areas don't improve significantly, and if Georgia controls the line of scrimmage, then that makes it for a long end.
We're talking with Lou Somogyi about Notre Dame and Georgia coming up Saturday night in Athens on Sports Radio 92 on The Game. Let's go back to that moment, because this is, you know, a lot of Georgia fans, as you imagine, Lou, down here are talking about what happened when the committee decided to pick Notre Dame over Georgia in the playoff last year. And then Georgia fans, you know, getting all in their feelings about what happened, you know, in the Orange Bowl, even though that may have been more Clemson being great than Notre Dame being bad. Kind of payback in their minds a little bit. Do you understand that the Georgia fans really want to prove that they should have been? And I know this is about this year, but it's still for a lot of Georgia fans about what happened with the committee last year.
Well, I can only look at it from a Notre Dame perspective, John and Hugh. And Notre Dame has nothing to apologize for going into the playoff. And this is what I always say to Georgia fans, is you were in the playoff last year. If you beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, you're in the playoff. Everyone talks about, let's go to eight teams. You are in the eight-team playoff. You lost a game during the regular season. LSU, you know, nominated you, but you have a chance now. You have a second chance. You're in the final eight. Everyone wants an eight-team playoff. You've got to expect. You were there. Georgia was in the eight-team playoff. You beat Alabama. You advance to the 14th, just like the NCAA tournament. You advance. You lose, you don't. They had their opportunity, and you just can't justify putting a two-loss team, no matter who they played, no matter who they lost to, over a team that, against an FBS caliber schedule, plays in FCS teams, went undefeated. I know that that's not going to be a popular opinion down there, but I that's the reality.
Well, I mean, because it's not because you didn't play the conference championship game and you didn't subject yourself to that. So that's I guess what I'm trying to get at isn't the semantics of it. I'm just trying to get at that there's still some hard feelings about what happened, and so that's kind of a little bit of an undercurrent to the game that's going to be kind of interesting to watch.
I understand that. I'm just saying that Georgia controlled its own destiny last year to get to the playoffs.
We're talking with Lou Somogyi of Blue and Gold Illustrated. To that end, Georgia's defense and its rush ends were a problem for them. It's been one of the few sore spots that they've had over the last few years with Kirby Smart. They seem to have solved that a little bit. They have a couple of young rush ends, one of whom was the number one player in high school in the nation last year, named Nolan Smith, who can really get after the quarterback. How does Notre Dame, you know, slow down that Georgia front for keeping Ian Book clean in the pocket?
Well, Ian's pretty mobile. I think that's an underrated aspect of his game. He was the leading rusher last week against New Mexico with 46 yards. And against Louisville, he had 81 yards, so that's 127 yards. The essential aspect there is to just maintain a poise in the pocket when the rush does come, because that was a problem against Clemson in the Cotton Bowl last year. And then it showed some against Louisville as well. And I think against New Mexico, he just had made a more concerted effort to keep his eyes downfield and maybe not bail so much. Notre Dame has a veteran line. Robert Hainsey at right tackle is in his third year starting. Liam Eikenberg, he has potential first-round status, not maybe this year, but next year. He's a senior. He started all of last year as well. You know, Tommy Kramer is in his third year of starting. He and Haynes were both on the unit that 2 years ago won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line. Aaron Banks started last year at left guard. You know, their one new guy is at center, the sophomore Jared Patterson, who was left tackle last year, but is considered one of the top five linemen this year. So there's experience there. Brian Kelly mentioned how this year's Georgia defensive line is bigger than the one from 2 years ago. Now, the one 2 years ago also was extremely athletic. You know, you had guys like Lonzo Carter and then, of course, Rakan Smith and the at the linebacker core. But, you know, hey, look, when you play Georgia, you're going to be facing great, great talent. But offensive line recruiting and tight end recruiting have always been a strength for Notre Dame as well. So it's going to be big on big there.
Louis, appreciate you taking a few minutes. We are all looking forward to it. The buzz down here is insane for this game. They're saying, in my opinion, biggest non-conference game ever in the history of Georgia. I do appreciate you taking a few minutes.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Have a good one.
Louis Somogyi of Blue and Gold Illustrated here. Matter of fact, just looking at one of the Notre Dame fan sites here, it says here, fan confidence high as Notre Dame enters program-defining Georgia game. Well, they're fan confidence. Yeah, I know. It's interesting. Program-defining. For Notre Dame's history, how many national titles they have? Now, granted, they haven't had one in 30 years, but still. Program-defining? And fan confidence is high. I'm glad their fan confidence is high. Hugh, I got to tell you, just between you and me, I think Georgia's going to smoke them. When Lou says, hey, we got to survive the first half, I'm like, good luck with that.
That's not just between you and me, John. I think everybody kind of feels that. If Georgia does not beat the brakes off of Notre Dame, I think a lot of people would be very, very disappointed. You talk about a program-defining win for Notre Dame, that probably would be the case, especially when you're talking about Georgia being considered one of the teams that are in the top tier of college football teams. For Notre Dame to come in here and knock them off like that, yeah, that would be a big coup.
Yeah, it would be a way too. And Notre Dame loses this game. This is the one thing about Notre Dame. With all the angst and what Louis Somogyi, I know he was making his case here, but let's be clear here. Notre Dame did not play in a conference championship game last year. They're not in a conference. And so they didn't have to risk that. It's not like Notre Dame was a quasi-ACC team, had to go play Clemson in the conference championship game, right? So Notre Dame has to win this game. If they lose this game, they're all but out. Morning show with John and you on Sports Radio 92 on the game on this very busy Wednesday. Competition Wednesday for the Atlanta Falcons as they get ready for the Indianapolis Colts. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. with Hugh and Andy on the Wait Ford Tailgate Show, 11 a.m. Bud Light countdown to kick off with Harry and Paul, and then 1 o'clock kick with Wes and Dave from Indianapolis, Indiana, as we get ready for game number 3 and see if the Falcons can build on that win against Philadelphia. Earlier this morning, we had a chance, you and I, to talk to head coach Dan Quinn about a lot of things about the Falcons and about this game and what he expects in Indianapolis. And Hugh began the interview by asking about that defense against Philadelphia last week and how the Falcons keep up that level of intensity.
Well, I certainly hope you would appreciate physicality. So I would say, number one, that's, like team defense is where it starts first, you know, and like having a level of physicality, the tackling, the hitting, like that has to be part of our identity. So I anticipate that being, certainly part of our style when everybody's watching us play, because that's true to the players of who we have. And we're trying to feature them in that way. So it was good to see the tackling, the physicality that we saw, but we feel like we've got tons of things to improve on heading into this week, and you know, feel like just getting started and putting guys in different roles and seeing what they can do. So we thought it was a good start for that.
Falcons head coach Dan Quinn with John and you. Coach, you know, when you were in Seattle as defense coordinator, certainly that defense had an identity and had a huge nickname in the Legion of Boom. Do you see this defense, because it looks like one that could develop its own identity and have its own kind of, I don't know if it needs a moniker or not, but have its own thing?
Well, for sure it has to have its own thing. That's kind of the connection, you know, when you're playing really good team defense, the communication, the physicality, the ball hawking, that's when, you know, you're at your best. And if you have everybody into that space, the talking, the physicality, the ball hawking, that's when you can play really good team defense. And that's what it's all about, man. And we got plenty of work to do. We didn't play as well down in the red zone as I hope we would, you know, let up a fourth down score. So we got plenty of work to do. But, man, do I love this team, you know, their toughness. And I'm hopeful that every time you guys see us play, you feel that and see that, and for the fans as well.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're talking to head coach Dan Quinn of the Atlanta Falcons. Coach, now, you do a great job of not showing anything on the sideline. But, Coach, when Caleb McGarry goes out, I know in your mind for a minute you had to be going through it just a little bit.
Yeah, because it didn't look good. You know, anytime, you know, a tackle gets rolled up from behind or a receiver from behind, you always worry, you know, that, you know, ankle or knee that, you know, could be in a, you know, compromising position. But, you know, this guy is a tough guy, and, you know, through his career, he's, you know, been healthy, you know, from the physical standpoint. So on those moments, man, you're worried and you just kind of, you know, wait and get the evaluation. But, yeah, I was definitely concerned, you know, for him, and just to make sure, to hearing that he was, you know, going to be able to come back, it was great news.
So, Coach, what is that like? I mean, in that split moment, because you have to still manage the game, but at the same time, you're worried about, you're concerned about your players. So in that split moment, how do you juggle all of that that's going on in your head?
Well, I think the first thing you want to, you know, recognize, and you can get to the player and say, man, let's see what it is. And, you know, because you know this from being a player, your mind can go somewhere fast. And so you say, man, just breathe and let's let the doctors take a look and see where we're at. And then you go right into the contingency of, you know, what needs to change or how does it affect special teams. So I kind of think player and then team. And if you think in those ways, like you got moments to, you know, make sure you can connect with the player, and then you can get into any contingency plans that may happen depending on where he plays. Like, you know, was he on field goal? You know, where does that do for, you know, some of the, you know, big package that we would have, and how do you change through that? And that's what the coaches go through in those moments to make sure that they're not able to miss a beat. But it's important for us to recognize guys are players too, you know, and, you know, you don't want to just move on to the next. You want to make sure, hey, man, checking in with them and seeing where they're at and let them know you're thinking them, and hopefully nothing that's going to last.
Yeah.
Falcons head coach Dan Quinn with John and Hugh. Hugh brought up McGarry. Let's talk about Matt Bosher and about the health of the team right now, Coach.
Yeah, so health of the team-wise, you nailed the two guys that you know will be limited some heading into the week, and that'll be, you know, the plan for Bosher. We'll rest him and rehab him and see where he goes towards the end of the week and have a better idea for him on Friday. So he won't kick until Friday. Regain the strength in his groin, and then we'll have a better feel. If he can do both the kickoffs and the punts, then we'll know. But he'll have to show that he's healthy to do that. We need him all the way through, and if we have to wait, we will. But, you know, he doesn't miss much, and so I know he's chomping at the bit to go. That'll be an important one. As far as McGarry goes, he'll be limited some, be able to do all the walkthrough pieces, but we'll have a, you know, good feel for him again as we're going through the week. So too early to put into where he's at all the way. We'll take it through the whole week.
Talking with head coach Dan Quinn, thanks for the update there. Let's go back to the game here. You know, the decision to go for fourth down and three there, which turned into be one of the signature moments, hopefully, of a great season, and the way that kind of processed through at that point in the game. How was that? Take me through that.
Well, I think a lot of things go into those factors. It's time, timeout, you know, and you'll, from the coaching side, you obviously, if you're making it, you're moving forward. But you think of the contingency, okay, worst-case scenario, where are you at? Where is the field? What would a field goal do in that moment? You still had your timeouts. It would change your thinking to go from tying it to having to get a touchdown to win it. So the good news is we've been in those moments a lot because we spent a lot of time together, Hugh, during the spring and the game management spaces to go. So it still comes down to execution, though, doesn't it? You know, you still have to nail the play and call and execute it all the way through. So, but that's where it goes down to, you know, to make sure in those moments you think through the plans and then You're able to, you know, act quickly. We had known we would go for it, you know, earlier than when it came up on just the fourth down. So you had those play calls in mind as well.
So, Coach, there was never a moment when Coach Carter came and I said, Coach, we're going to run this rocket screen. You weren't like, what? What the hell? You weren't like that at all.
Well, it was part of a check, you know, if they were going to be in a zero blitz hue. So it wasn't the first part of the call, but it was definitely the second part of the call. And so, no, there's not, because at the end, man, you're putting in the best things that you think are best for that moment. And that happened to be the best call at the time. So, no, man, once you make the decision, that's the best decision. And you let it rip and go play it aggressive. And so that's usually how I think of it. But I'm pretty optimistic. So I think when we call it, I think it's going to work.
Yeah. Hey, Coach, and I got to tell you, it was a couple times watching that game that you could tell that that defense was playing really aggressive. It was a couple passes that were dropped. And so you kind of knew at the way that the game was going on that they're probably going to be in certain formations that they're probably going to press you a little bit. So that's probably what made it a little bit easier and made that check down work out for you.
Yeah, and the you know, anytime you can, you know, affect the quarterback with different ways, and we got to say, we got a lot of respect for them. They're a tough team, and quarterback's a tough guy. We already had good respect for him. But I thought, you know, there were some plays in the game that were kind of the unsung ones. You know, a guy like Adrian Claiborne, you know, at the end, applying pressure. You know, we move him down some inside over the guard. Sometimes we leave him outside, but everybody has the roles. And so for his, in those moments, like, hey, man, this is your time and why you got to go. And so we didn't have that op the week before. We hardly played any nickel defense. It was all out of whack. So the different roles that guys have and when it comes up, can you nail it? I think that's a big piece. And there's lots of guys on this team that have good roles that, you know, help the team be at our best so you can kick ass when those moments arise.
Talking with head coach Dan Quinn, I would imagine here as we get towards the time that you leave for Indianapolis that, you know, in practice, that there is a decided sea change of a difference between this week and last week at this time.
Well, the process for us, we have a saying here, the process takes care of all the learning, man, but you got to put it all into it, the learning, all the techniques, all the stuff. And this is an AFC, you know, team that we don't face all the time. So it'll take some extra to get to know the guys. It'll take some extra to find, you know, some of the things that are unique to them. And so we'll put it in for sure. But, you know, like anything's possible, man. You got to put your mind, attitude all into the process to see where we can get to. And it'll take everybody to do that. The look team, the, you know, the routes that certain people run, the matchups that we go against one another today. So we just, man, we just have this process that we trust and let the guys, you know, it'll take you all the way through. So today the game is far from our mind, but getting our game plan and the techniques we need to do to play well, that's definitely at the front of it.
Head coach Dan Quinn joining John and here. What is it about the AFC that's been a kind of a bugaboo for this club over the last few years?
Yeah, for sure it has. And so we made a, you know, big emphasis to make sure that we give that the same preparation, the same mindset, the same attitude that we need for the division and the NFC game. So, but you're exactly right. We didn't play well against the AFC, so we got to change that. And this is a tough team. Their home opener, their crowd will be into it, and we better have our road attitude correct. Heading into this game, because playing in Indianapolis, they got a great crowd and always are into it, and a bunch of playmakers at different spots. So it'll be a hell of a game for sure.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're talking to head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn. So, Coach Quinn, I know these two guys have been playing really, really hard, and it really doesn't show up in the stat sheets a whole lot. Your assessment of Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley so far this season?
Well, I agree that you know, we're definitely making strides, and I think it. You know, hopefully we'll have a conversation months from now about the improvement that we are making. One thing I like about them so far, I feel their energy and their effort to go finish. And if we can keep working our technique, keep working our conditioning, keep working that stuff, that those will be the things that will pay off because, you know, better than anybody, you know, like a lot of the sacks are second, the third, the fourth to go finish it out. And but I like where they're headed. We're spending a bunch of time together, especially early in the week, to put the plan together, to work the technique. So I'm encouraged about where they're at. And I think, you know, Tack especially came into the offseason fit, strong, ready. And so he didn't have that for a couple of years, you know, from the offseason, you know, Hugh. So for him to have his first full offseason, get to, you know, go through it, I think that was a big factor for him.
Coach Quinn, how much does it change that you don't have a whole lot of, you know, Andrew Luck is one thing. You got a lot of tape on him. But Jacoby Brissett, he's got a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, I think oftentimes, and we've been through this before, to say, you know, there's still a system, you know, that they have or that they believe in, that Frank you know, is going to make sure that the things that Jacoby does best, that's a big part of their plan. They've been an excellent running team so far, right off the bat, John. So that's one of the things that I think allows them to get off to a good start is their run game, the play pass that goes with it. And then for Jacoby, he is, you know, similar to Andrew in terms of mobility and outside the pocket and creating on the run. Those are always hard plays to defend because you have a first play that starts and then a second play begins when the quarterback gets outside the pocket, and you better be prepared for that too.
Yeah, and of course I would imagine that this week there's going to be a lot of emphasis too on one thing that you haven't been able to do offensively, which is really establish that run game this week.
Yeah, and we're going to keep digging on it. We're close. It hasn't been one, you know, overriding thing. There's a good double team. We were late coming off. Here was a TFL that knocked us back on a toss play. So we're going to continue to put the work in. It's going to come through for us. We're not where we want to be yet in the run game, but we are going to get there. And, we have to make sure we keep digging on it and keep battling for it. I think Dirk's done a good job of that. You can get frustrated when it's not going quite like you like. But, in our case, we know how important it is, and we're going to continue to feature it because it's not just important this week, it's important every week.
Head Coach Dan Quinn, this hour of the program brought to you by Renter's Warehouse, says on the Rundown, Hughes World.
That's what it, in the next episode, I'm going to talk about chicken sandwich war. That's ramped up a little bit. Something else is coming. I'm going to tell you about that on the other side of Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You got to stay focused, man. That's all I'm saying.
Only from the mind
of Hugh Douglas.
Hughes World is brought to you by Georgia's Own Lit Ultra Premium Vodka, the smoothest vodka in the game. Get lit and live it today. So, you know, a couple weeks ago, there was a whole chicken craze, a whole chicken sandwich craze when Popeyes broke out with the chicken sandwich, so much so that it had folks standing in line. It had folks fighting and whatnot over these chicken sandwiches. So much so that they ran out of chicken sandwiches, and now everybody's going through chicken withdrawal, and they don't know what to do with themselves. But enter another player in the fried chicken sandwich game. So KFC has entered into the fray. As you know, a couple weeks ago, they were talking about, you know, trying to get into the chicken game. They got into it a little bit late. But right, they're getting into the chicken game now, and their sandwich is called the Kentucky Fried Chicken and Donut Sandwich. KFC is throwing its hat into the chicken ring by adding somewhat of a sweet and sour mix, I guess you would call it. According to reports, the fast food chain is testing a fried chicken and donut sandwich in the Richmond, Virginia area to see if customers are interested in their version of sweet and salty craze. Dubbed Chicken Fried Chicken and Donuts, Kentucky Fried Chicken and Donuts, the new sandwich will be sold at 7 locations in Richmond, served hot and fresh no matter the time of day. The donuts created tasty flavor experience in every bite. Customers will have a variety of options to satisfy their sweet and savory taste buds, said spokesperson. And that's all the story about this. Now, we were trying to figure out whether this story was true or not. And my thing is this. A fried chicken and donut sandwich, I think that is not going to be the answer to all of this chicken craze. I don't think that's going to be an answer. Yeah, when I think of a fried chicken and donut sandwich, I think of that's something more like of a niche, kind of a niche thing, something that you would get at a ballpark if you were just going to a ballpark to try to just get your, you know, something different craze on. Don't know how much this sandwich is going to cost, but I can't see if they're trying to capitalize on the whole Popeye's chicken thing with folks standing in line for this chicken and donut sandwich. I don't think that's going to be the case, because I think two of the things that are flawed. I don't think KFC makes some good chicken. I don't know what their chicken sandwich tastes like, though. I can't see the chicken sandwich tasting that great. I know they have them, but I just don't see it tasting. I just don't see it tasting that great. And then where you getting these donuts from, too? I think they would have probably did themselves a little bit of service if they had teamed up with like a Krispy Kreme or somebody like that to make the donuts for them. Because when you just talk about putting a donut on there, like that's an off-brand. That might be an off-brand donut. That might not be a quality donut. And we all know that in order for this sweet and spicy craze, or whatever they want to call it, this sweet and salty craze to take off, you're going to have the right donut to make that thing pop. I don't really think that they put that much thought into this. I think that KFC looked at all the hubbub that Chick-fil-A and Popeye's chicken had mustered up, and they felt like they had to do something to get back in the chicken game. Because like I said, I think they have a chicken sandwich. wasn't doing that great, so they wanted to put this donut thing on there.
Yeah, $7.50, Q. $7.50. You're going to spend $7.50 for two donuts and a piece of chicken?
Nah, especially when that chicken looked kind of anemic. That chicken that they put it on didn't look that hearty. You look at them. What was it? Those Popeye chicken sandwiches? They look pretty hearty. They look like a hearty sandwich. That looked like a sandwich that I don't know how much it cost, but whatever you paid for that, that looked like that was well worth it. But this sandwich with the donuts and stuff on it, to me, that just looked like that's just a fat person's move. That's just trying to get, you know, just to get there. Like you've been probably, you know, partaking in the CBDs, like on a regular, and you just got the munchies and you want to put some, you know, together to make your cravings go away. That's what it kind of feels like to me. There's no heart or soul put into this chicken sandwich, I don't believe. It's not going to be like the Popeye's chicken sandwich. Oh, yeah, by the way, does anybody know when the Popeye's sandwiches come back? Have they made that announcement yet, whether or not they're going to bring back the Popeye's chicken sandwich anytime soon? Does anybody know?
No, I can look it up here.
Has anybody been, you know, following that story? But, no, that's about it. I mean, I just don't think that this sandwich, this KFC sandwich is going to get much traction. It doesn't even sound tasty. It doesn't sound like anything that anybody would want to stand in line for. But then again, I might be wrong because I didn't think that the Popeye's sandwich is going to be something that somebody stood in line for either. But that's it. That's all I got for Hughes, brother.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I guess McDonald's has a new chicken sandwich. Everybody running with the chicken
sandwich.
Everybody
trying to run with the chicken sandwich, man. I mean, the whole bananas and going crazy over these chickens, I didn't see that coming, but I might be wrong. Maybe this chicken sandwich will go over well, and there will be people going in there buying a donut and chicken sandwich. And then, you know, the donut is not going to be as fluffy like the donut that they're showing on the picture. It's not going to be the same thing. It's going to be a smushed donut.
Right.
And I don't know if the KFC's customer service is that great. I mean, that might be an issue as well with the customer service and whatnot.
I do like KFC original, though, I have to admit.
Oh, yeah, original chicken is good. Like, the chicken, like, you can't go wrong with KFC chicken. KFC was the go-to. Like, back in the day, it was like the hierarchy of chicken. It was KFC, and then it was like churches.
Mm-hmm.
And churches, because they had the bigger pieces of chicken and you got more chicken. But it was like the hierarchy of chicken back in the day. It was KFC, and then it was churches. And the biscuits was really the ones that put it over the top. Like, if you got some biscuits with the gravy, that really put it over the top. And then we got, like, the Mrs. Winter started coming in. And then Popeye's made a strong push. And then the go-to chicken places kind of fell by the wayside. And then there was that rumor that, you know, that church's chicken really wasn't chicken, you know, and all the other good stuff. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
I always loved church's chicken. Get them big old jalapenos at the front end. Yeah, church is my kind of go-to.
Yeah, that's the Chicken Wars recap. That's what it is.
Chicken Wars recap. Well, we got Burger Wars going on because it is National Cheeseburger Day.
Cheeseburger, cheeseburger.
And the best cheeseburger in town is over there at Piedmont and Cheshire Bridge Grindhouse, or up in Athens at the one on Lumpkin, because Grindhouse killer burgers
are
great.
Man, they got some great. The turkey burgers, man. Can't wait to get to Athens to get those turkey burgers.
We're going to be there Saturday, but our coverage starts Friday from Grindhouse on Lumpkin in Athens.
And a nice Sprite.
Andy and Randy Friday 10 to 2, Duke's Bell 2 to 7. You and I 9 to noon on Saturday, and the college game time with Chris and Chuck and Randy Mack noon to 3, all leading up to our coverage of Georgia Notre Dame as we continue to look ahead to the huge game that's going to take place Saturday night in Athens. Speaking of Andy and Randy, they're up next on Sports Radio 92 on the game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.